Let's begin with prayer. Our Father, we thank you. We can again be in your house to worship you, to hear your word, to study it, to fellowship with one another. We pray you'll make this a profitable class and a blessed time of worship for us later. In Jesus' name, amen. Please turn to Matthew 24, verse 32. Matthew 24, 32. It's short. I'll just read it after you're there. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see all these things, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Now, it doesn't say it's a parable in the English translation, but it actually is. The word that's lesson here is the same Greek word that's translated parable everywhere else. So this is a parable, but it's very short, and it leaves questions unanswered. At first I was going to skip it, and I thought, wait a minute, we can't skip it, because we used to have a fig tree, by the way, when I was a kid in our backyard. It was never warm enough to produce real, I mean, they were always green at the best. But and I can't remember really when it began to put forth its leaves, but they would have known in the Middle East. When the branch becomes tender and puts forth out its leaves, you know the summer is near. So also when you see all these things, you know that it is near at the very gates. That tells us when certain signs happen, something's going to happen. But it doesn't tell us what all these things are. And to find that, we actually have to go back and look at basically all the rest of the first part of chapter 24. So while the parable itself is short, there's not really much to interpret in it, we do need to know what all these things are. So turn to the beginning of the chapter, please. And we have, I'm just going to read the first three verses. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. But he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." And he said on the Mount of Olives, now the Mount of Jerusalem's on Mount Zion, and then there's a little valley whose name I do not remember, and then there's the Mount of Olives. So they may have been sitting there looking right across the valley at the temple, but at least that's where they had gone. And he said, the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the close of the age?" And they really had three things they were asking about, and he proceeds to answer those three. First of all, they wanted to know when the temple was going to be raised or destroyed. When they say these things, it must refer to that because that's the only thing we have mentioned prior to it. But then secondly, what about the signs of your coming? And thirdly, the end of the age. Now, this is not a prophecy conference. This is the prophecy people love this chapter. And if of the making of books there is no end, certainly the scheduling the prophecy conferences is close behind. This is not a prophecy conference, but we'll get into it a little bit. I'm just saying that don't expect me to tell you who the Antichrist is. John tells us in 1 John there have been many Antichrists already, so hey, you get to choose the one you want. Okay, here we are. Three things he's going to look at, and Jesus. Then in verse 4, Jesus answered them. And here are the things he covers. He covers, I think, the signs of his coming. And then secondly, he focuses on the destruction of Jerusalem. That would be the things they were asking about first, which is the destruction of the temple. And then thirdly, the end of the age. So I would like somebody, please, to read verses 4 through 14 for us. Please. All right. Now, these things are not necessarily in chronological order. Some of them are obviously, I would say obviously, simultaneous. What's the first thing that's going to happen that he mentions?
False Christ, and Christ is here, Christ is there.
Sure. Yeah, false Christ, Christ is here, Christ is there. He'll get back to that point later. I was looking up in Wikipedia, and under false Christ, they list 134 of them. There have been more, but they list 134. They don't name all of them, but they name more than a dozen. And many of them in the last 200 years. Can you think of a couple in this country? Not just false prophets, but people who claim to be the Messiah. Who?
Jim Jones?
Probably so, I don't remember. You all know Jim Jones, or does that mean nothing to you? David Koresh, we'll get to him in a minute, yeah. Jim Jones had a cult. They were Americans. They moved to Guyana in South America. And when you hear the phrase, drink the Kool-Aid, well, it refers to them because they had killed a congressman from California, and the authorities were closing in on them, and he had his followers all drink poison Kool-Aid. He did the same. So they found, I don't know how many, 100 or so dead in this compound. And that was back in, must be the 70s, I can't remember for sure. Then there was David Koresh, who was born the year I graduated from high school. Young man, he's no longer with us. Does anybody know how he met his end? The feds killed him. He had committed some kind of a crime, and it may have been ATF forces, converged on his compound. These were the Branch Davidians. But he claimed to be the Messiah. And there was a firefight. Many were killed, children included. Then there's Sung Myung Moon, the head of the Moonies, who moved to America. He also got in trouble with the law for filing false tax returns. But he claimed to be the Messiah's younger brother, the new Messiah, because Christ never got to complete his work, according to them. And that's the Unification Church. If you know anybody in the Unification Church, it's, as our president would say, they're bad hombres. So, those are just recent in America. There have been at least three false Christs that have arisen as offshoots from the Latter-day Saints, not part of the main group, and more. But the point is, when Christ said there would be false Christs, boy, there have been. And from almost the very beginning, Simon Magus was claimed to be the great power from God. Well, anyway, false Christ, what else does the Lord mention here as a sign? Wars and rumors of wars. Well, of course, we've had those for 2,000 years. Why should we not be alarmed by them? I mean, unless the troops are coming our way. Why should we not be alarmed? Yeah, he says, don't be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is not yet. Now, I have encountered, or at least read about, people who say, oh, we got wars, we've got rumors of wars, the end is near. And Christ says that's exactly not the case. And we need to bear that in mind. Then what else? What else does he mention? This also gets people in the panic, thinking that the Lord is bound to come soon. Famines, earthquakes. Now, Luke and Mark both record the same discourse. Luke adds pestilences, which Matthew doesn't mention. So these things, and there people will say, oh, it's never been this bad, the Lord's coming. But no, these are, as Craig said, the beginnings of birth pains. What else does he mention after that? Oh, no, at that. Yeah, what does he mention after that? Yeah, yeah.
Hated by all nations.
And they're already hated by quite a few. I guess we could expect that here if we live long enough. Or our children or grandchildren, whatever this. Well, Christians are already hated by a good portion of the nation because we don't have progressive values or just because Satan's stirring them up. But again, if these are only the birth pains. These are not. Signs that it's at the door. Just as a fun exercise, where else in the Bible do we have wars and famines and pestilence and then the tribulation of Christians mentioned? It's not a parable. Where? Exodus? Prospectively, yes, but I'm going to the back of the Bible. Revelation, we've got four horsemen. And then we've got the souls of the martyrs under the altar crying out. John tells us, in terms of the visions he saw, what Christ is telling us here. It's more symbolic. Well, it is symbolic. But it's still, he's talking about the same sorts of things. All right. And what's going to result from this tribulation? Besides the fact that some will be killed.
People will leave
Christianity. Yeah, people will leave Christianity. And not only they will not only be apostates, but what else?
Betrayers.
They're betrayers. Yeah, they'll hate their former, you know, they claim to be Christians, now they hate them, turn against them. And that's, I want to read you a little something. This has been going on for a long time. Under Decius, who was the Roman emperor from 249 to 251, well, that's a short reign, he was not the first to demand the Christians abandon the faith. And the Romans were pretty lenient in their own way. If you would say, I'm not a Christian, I'm no longer a Christian, and say, Caesar's Lord, they'd let you go. Well, here is a paper found in Egypt. To the commissioners for sacrifices in the village of Alexander's Island from Aurelius Diogenes, son of Satabus of the village of Alexander's Island, age 72, scar on right eyebrow. I have always sacrificed to the gods, and now in your presence, in accordance with the terms of the edict, I have done sacrifice and poured libations and tasted the sacrifices, and I request you to certify to this effect. Farewell. So he wanted the officials to say that he had agreed, and he was apparently a Christian, but he now was sacrificing the gods. And we have the libellus, the certificate of sacrifice, by a guy. I certify that I witnessed his sacrifice, Aurelius Syrus. And dated the first year of the Emperor Decius. So, giving up the faith has always happened when people, when persecution arises. Some give it up. Where do we see this in the parable earlier? Yeah. Oh, wait. No. No. Well, yes, in a way. In the parable of the sower, when tribulation arises on account of the word, they fall away. So, but the Lord assures us he who endures to the end, he or she who endures to the end will be saved. And then there's, under these signs, let's go back to this paragraph that Craig read. Because many will fall away, and others, their love will just grow cold, like the Ephesian church, but they aren't necessarily leaving the faith, I don't think. What's next? Or what is mentioned next? It would be next, actually. Okay, and that in fact will come up in the next parable, which I hope we get to today, which is that of the wise and foolish virgins. But he has here in verse 14, this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So we're talking about worldwide evangelism. Now, of all these signs of his coming, which ones have been fulfilled in whole or in part? All of them, at least in part. Now, the word has not got out into all the world. There are countries that have been closed to the gospel, and there are tribes that have not been reached, and so on. But it looks like we're getting there. So we should be watching for more of that. So signs of his coming. Yes. Well, that's a good question, and that's a historical question. I don't know the answer. I don't know. I get the impression that for a while the Christians thought that Christ could come in their lifetime, but obviously he didn't, and they revised their views. But they may have thought that. They may have, when it talks about the whole world, it sometimes means the Roman world. Yeah. That's good, and the Lord will continue to make that point as we get into the last three parables, one today and then two next week. We will have one more week. Okay, then there's a new section heading in my ESV, the abomination of desolation. I think he's focusing here on what's going to happen in Jerusalem, but it's going to happen during the time of the previous paragraph, so to speak, somewhere in there. Somewhere before the end comes, which the Lord mentioned in 14. So, could I have somebody read verses 15 through 27? Yes.
So when you see the abominations of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea believe. But the one who is on the housetop not go down and take water in the house. And let the one who is in the field not turn back and take his clothes. And alas, for women who are pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that you, your flight, may not be in winter or on Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation. No, and never will be. And if those days are not been cut short, or had not been cut short, no human being would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christ and false prophets will arise, great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness, do not
Oh, and the last verse there.
Okay. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather.
Okay. He speaks of the abomination of desolation, which is mentioned in Daniel Daniel. You can write this down if you want to read it, Daniel 11:31. I look forward to our pastor getting to that chapter in a few weeks, because he's doing a series on Daniel. I'll be interested to hear what he says. But it seems to me there are at least two and probably three applications, past, present, past, contemporary with Jesus, and maybe future, probably. The original one, I believe, was the when Antiochus Epiphanes, we all remember him. Okay, he was a descendant of one of the generals of Alexander the Great. When Alexander died, he gave his empire in pieces to four generals. One of them got the Eastern Mediterranean, Syria, Palestine. And one of his descendants was a guy named Antiochus Epiphanes. And he wanted to Grecianize the area. I mean, Alexander was Greek, and his generals were Greek, and there was this process of Hellenization or Grecianization which occurred. And that's why Paul could write in Greek and all kinds of people could understand it, even though they had their own languages as well. Well, this guy, he wanted to beat the Jews down and make them worship false idols. And so apparently, and somebody who knows the history better can tell me, he erected idols in the temple in Jerusalem, and I think he had a pig sacrificed on the altar there. The Jews rose up sometime after that under the Maccabees and threw off this regime. But that would be the first abomination of desolation. The second, I believe, is the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. And I think that's what he's primarily describing here. If you're on the housetop, don't go down to take what's in the house. So Phil, who is a roofer, if you're on the housetop, just leave. They had flat roofs back then, and they lived on them. Certainly, Jerusalem was destroyed, and the temple was razed when the city was finally taken by Titus, who later became emperor. Not the Titus in the Bible. I mean, not Paul's companion. It's never been rebuilt. What's in the place of that temple now? A Muslim mosque, the Dome of the Rock. Now, there are those, again, who attend too many prophecy conferences who think, well, that means that mosque has got to come down and the Jews have to rebuild the temple so that it can be razed by yet another Antichrist. That I couldn't speak to. But Luke, in his account, adds something interesting here, which helps us. Keep your hand in Matthew and turn to Luke 21. Verses 20 through 24. Now, you can see that it fits right in the same place because the signs of that we read about earlier in Matthew are earlier here in Luke. And then here we have, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation, that's the abomination of desolation, has come near. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let those who are inside the city depart, and let not those who are in the country enter it. For these are days of vengeance to fulfill all that is written. Alas for women who are pregnant, and for those who are nursing infants in those days. For there will be great distress upon the earth and wrath against this people. They will fall by the edge of the sword and be led captive among all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now that last verse suggests that, to me at least, there's going to be a period of time after the destruction of Jerusalem, and which we are in now. Now, Jerusalem is no longer trodden underfoot by the Gentiles. Most of the city all the city is in Jewish hands. And that leads to the possibility of a future application. And we're back in Matthew now. Verses 21 through 28 may refer to that. I'm very agnostic on this position. I don't have any idea. If you're a post-millennialist, you don't see that. What do you think is going to happen? You post-millennialists. Or an amillennialist. Do you know or care what those things are? It's only premillennialists and primarily dispensational premillennialists who really get into this thing. I could say what, along with President Obama, that's above my pay grade. I just don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
A pan-millennialist, it'll all pan out in
the end. I like that. There may be a final future Antichrist. You certainly can get that idea from reading Revelation. And so I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't think we could say much, except that the guy is going to... If there is such a guy, Jerusalem's going to be in tough shape again. So I leave you to think about those things yourself. But I'll take any comments, any ideas. If you've read John Walvoord or some of those other guys, you'll have an idea. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we want to think about who's going to be the guy, and what's going to happen when Jesus says, like, all these things are going to happen, but you endure to the end. You spread the gospel. You keep your love hot for me. That's what I want you to work to think about. Not, you know, it's always attractive to not do that.
Yeah, we're never told, well, the only place we might be told to look for who the Antichrist is his number in Revelation. His number is the number of a man, 666, except some documents say 616. But and let, you know, if you've got brains, figure this out. Well, I don't know anybody who has brains who has figured it out, and everybody else says, yeah, that's right. So I think we're just going to leave that. But hey, these are all these things that Jesus refers to when he says, from the fig tree learn its lesson, when you see all these things, you know the end is near. Now, that would be verses 29 through 31, and I won't read those. One question to ask yourself, and I don't want to get into it because I don't want to get into it. Christians will undergo tribulation. Is that the same as the Great Tribulation, or just Great Tribulation? Well, of course, if you take one view of prophecy, you'll say, no, that's yet to come. But enough talking about my ignorance. Let's move on. Yeah? Yeah, for me it is, yeah. And that's happening. I mean, we've seen pictures of the Christians from Egypt lined up on the beach, ready to be in orange suits, ready to be killed by ISIS. Yes?
It's funny. I mentioned to somebody 20 years ago, I would have never dreamt that in my lifetime I would have heard of Christians being beheaded. I would have said, that's in the Bible. Sure, it talks about it. I am shocked, really. It's very sobering. And to me, I find it to be another verification of the scripture. I mean, there it is. And not that I'm saying it's signifying a particular timeline that we're in. I'm just saying the Bible rings true. Here it is. And we're seeing it before our very eyes.
Well said. Kim?
Just to throw it out there as a fun fact.
We love fun facts.
The number system was, they used the alphabet as a number system. Is that an accurate statement back then? And apparently,
in Greek,
Hebrew or Greek, or I probably guess Greek, spelling of Nero Caesar typically was added up to 666, but spelling variants added up to 616. And apparently something was made of that. And this is, like I said, fun fact, I don't know.
Yeah, in case you couldn't hear, Kevin's saying that the Greeks used letters for numbers, like the Romans, but the Greeks were a little more systematic about it. And the someone has said that you take the letters in 666 and they stand for Nero Caesar or something like that. And certainly that was the first big persecution against Christians in the empire. I mean, the Jews persecuted them in the Holy Land. Paul was part of it for a while. But in the empire as a whole, Nero started that. So he certainly could be an antichrist. As I said, John says there are many antichrists that have come. So we know it's the last hour. So, and that's what John says. Well, the last hour has been going on a long time, which makes some people say, where is the promise of his coming? What book is that from? Anybody know?
Second Peter,
yes. Someone who's been in the women's Bible study. The rest of you who've been in the women's Bible study and didn't say anything, you were thinking it. right. Yeah. Well, I got to look at 22. Oh, if those days had not been cut short. Yeah, well, this is what leads good scholars to think that there will be another fulfillment of this, and besides the one under the Romans. Now, if you think the one under the Romans was the last one, period, till Christ comes, you are a preterist, as long as you're some... Well, that's what they tell me. Coming from the word preterite, which means past. You language students may know that. again, I go in and read stuff and come out just as ignorant as I was going in. So it's worth your study, but there are more important things, such as we mentioned, how to stay faithful. Yes.
Many of them clearly thought this was being fulfilled in their day. They fled, and somebody, we'll say Eusebius, put it down to say Eusebius, reports that the Christians in the days of his time, of that time rather, read this passage, and he says they saved their lives by taking this counsel to heart, fleeing, and thus escaping the siege of Jerusalem. They presumably knew Greek pretty well, and they might have, had a better sense of authorial intentions, living closer to the time. So, for what it's worth, that's how they interpret it.
Okay, it is certainly true that a number of Christians fled to the town of Pella, which is in the Jordan Valley, and escaped this. So there, there probably is a future fulfillment, but I don't know. I can say much about it. Now, what is the takeaway from all this discourse, and then the parable? The parable really gives us the takeaway from all these things that Jesus said. Yes.
Endures to the end will be saved.
I think that's right. And I think the fact that the Lord lists all these things suggests that we might have to endure a long time. That certainly proved to be true. And what he, well, here, after he tells the parable of the fig tree, he, starting the rest of the chapter, starting in 36 through 51, I won't read it all, but I'll just pick out a few verses. Concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father only. Therefore, you also, I'm just skipping some, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. So even though the fig tree is putting out its branches, or its leaves, that doesn't mean we can pinpoint as, was it Howard or Harold Camping did? Anybody remember him?
Harold.
This is a man who had a television, I think, ministry, and he predicted that the Lord was going to come in April of, I don't know what,
2011,
yeah, that sounds about right.
Then he predicted it in 2012.
Yeah, yeah, and it didn't, the Lord didn't come, and he predicted it 6 months later. He said, oh, I was wrong, and he was wrong again. And then he said, you know, I'm not going to predict anymore. Well, he had more sense than some of them do. many have predicted. Some of you may be old enough to remember Herbert W. Armstrong. Anybody remember Herbert W. Armstrong? Well, he had a radio program, and he was a prophet, so he thought. And he thought that this is all going to come to a head in 1972. I wish I had sent away for his little booklet, because 1972 passed fairly uneventfully, unless he lived at the Watergate, I guess. No, that was even before Watergate. There have been others, but, you know, the diehards always find a way around it. William Miller is kind of known as the founder of the Seventh-day Adventists. He was an earnest student of the Bible, and he concluded from studying his Bible that Christ was to come someday in October. I don't remember the date, but definite date, in 1844.
Was it 40? He directed to 44 or something.
He may have, but that happens. Anyway, his followers donned white robes and got up on the hills waiting for the Lord to come that day. And they waited. Well, Miller retired from the scene, but his followers ultimately became Seventh-day Adventists. And they decided that the Lord really did come then, but he came to the heavenly sanctuary. Forget about the fact Revelation says there will be no temple there. He came to the heavenly sanctuary and cleansed it. Well, Jehovah's Witnesses predicted, whoever their head guy was, that the generation that was alive, 1914 was a big year. The people who lived there were going to see the coming of Christ and the kingdom established. Well, apparently, they have now said, well, Christ came spiritually, because, of course, all those people are dead. If you were an adult in 1914, you're dead. And contrary to what they think, in hell, unless some of them repented and left. Anyway, they always find a way, don't they, to justify their error. They don't stone prophets the way false prophets, the way we're told to do in Deuteronomy. That might be fun. But I had a principal once when I was teaching in Texas who'd grown up in a missionary family in China. He actually saw a public beheading, or public hanging. And, you know, those things always draw a crowd, even in this country when they do. Anyway, I'm getting off on a rabbit trail. I really am. So the takeaway is that we are to be ready. And that leads us into the next parable. We won't be able to finish it. I think I gave you homework that you ought to read it, didn't I? Maybe not. Well, I'll give you that homework now. I'll read it, and I'll ask you a couple of questions to think about. Then the kingdom of heaven, and this has to do with what he just talked about. In fact, he gives us the takeaway or the lesson at the end, but we'll get to the end when I finish reading. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the wives took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, "Here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will be not enough for us and you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." Ha, at midnight. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered, "Truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." A point he had made back in verse 36. So this is emphasizing that. But there'll be some other points that we'll talk about next week. And I'm just going to leave you with a couple of questions. There is a character notably missing from this story that you would expect there. Don't say it aloud, but just think about it. There was somebody wrote a... No, I don't know. Anyway, there's a character you expect to be in this parable, but there isn't. And there's a reason why. And see if you can think of that. And with that, I say we're through for the day.